At this time, I'd like to introduce Sue D. from Your Belinda.
Hi, I'm Sue.
Hi, Sue.
Last week I shared, and I'm really grateful that you wanted me to, but today when Keith said that he would give me my cake, I was thinking we have so many new people here. And Keith has a lot of experience of what it's like to go to Alcoholics Anonymous with no support in the home. And he knows what it's like to be sober with support. And he knows what it's like to be drunk and living with a crazy person. And so I asked him if he'd be willing to share tonight and share that for mostly the newcomers, because a lot of newcomers in here are doing the things in the program that I did before I got a program. And so being this birthday month, and we're not going to be here Saturday night, I wanted him to share. And I really wanted the newcomers to hear his story and what's important to him about Al-Anon, so you can understand why you need to be here and work a program. Yeah, the neat part is that it's, I didn't mention a while ago, it's also Simone's birthday. And we talked to her the other day, and the girls in her home group last Thursday gave her a birthday party. And without the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and Al-Anon, our family would not be together. And so an alcoholic can share in an Al-Anon meeting if they share a pitch with an Al-Anon, and I'm done sharing, and I'm going to introduce Keith, my husband. Would you please tell him?
Hello, everybody. I'm an alcoholic. My name's Keith.
Hi, Keith.
And the most important thing I can say is I'm not taking a drink of alcohol, nor have I used any kind of narcotics since May 11th, 1976. And for that, I'm especially grateful. It's a privilege to be able to participate in the Al-Anon meeting, because I certainly support Al-Anon. I probably wouldn't be sober if it were not for Al-Anon. I feel very strongly that. I don't run around saying that in AA meetings, because there's a lot of people in AA that don't even know what Al-Anon is. But in Al-Anon, I can assure you that I wouldn't be sober had it not been for Al-Anon. Had not my wife gone to Al-Anon, my daughter went to Alateen and started working a program there. And qualifying why I'm 33 years in the program on May 11th, Sue takes her birthday on May 11th as her birthday, and our daughter takes some other date a little bit farther down, because she was drop-kicked into Alateen and on May the 11th, and she didn't land until sometime after that, so she chooses to say that's her date. But she didn't really want to go to Alateen for a year and a half after she went, so only when she finally went one, two meetings a week for a year and a half, she went to a meeting. A little girl came in there all beat up, just like Simone was, and she came up to Simone, and she asked Simone to help her. And Simone had been going reluctantly, but going, and understanding that if Daddy had to go to AA, she had to go to Alateen or else move out, and she didn't have any place to go. So when that little girl came in there and asked Simone to help her, Simone lit up. It was just an amazing thing. She came home and she was just lit up, and she was so excited. And from then on, 33 years, why Simone's been in the program all that period of time, even though she lives in Italy, she went to the Orient, she went all over modeling, and she kept her program. She's got a sponsor that she has had, who is her sponsor. She calls her sponsor. There's a lot of times in 33 years that if we judged each other, any one of the three of us would say that the other one or the other two was not working a program that I would like. But there's, in three of us, there's always been one in God consciousness. So as a family unit, there's always been one of us in God consciousness. Sometimes all three, but always one since May 11, 1976. And so we have a history, and it's consistent. It's without any time off for good behavior without any vacations. It's consistent 24/7 for 33 years. To qualify that, Sue and Simone and I started speaking at conventions when we were like 6 months in the program because we were a family. And just recently, Sue and I, because I keep track of things now that I'm sober, we've been speaking around the country for 30 years, and at least 30 times a year. And we've never missed a commitment because of a misconnected air flight, or we've never canceled a commitment. We've had to work a program on various commitments. So, well, I tell you that because we have consistency. At 33 years, we have consistency. What's given us that consistency is a home group. And the consistency and the herding, if you will, of the home group, and the home group having commitments and teaching us commitments, and sponsorship, keeping, you know, the reins in, or keeping us in a circle, keeping us in a realm of accountability, and that's the trick, that's the answer. Certainly God is in it, but it's the accountability, it's the commitment, it's the sponsorship. And just yesterday, I went to my sponsor, and he has an old-timers meeting. There was 20 old-timers there, and they had a 1,000 years of sobriety from 30 years to 60 years, and I fit in. I know all those people. I grew up with those people in the 33 years I've been here, even though I've gone to various meetings around the area, and I've stayed right here. And where's the Costa Mesa lady? This is Central Orange County up here. Like the Inland Empire and Central California, this is Central Orange County. So I've stayed right here in Central Orange County, and even though I've ventured out with various temptations. So what I would like to share with you, I mean, the answer to why there's three people here in the same family with 33 years is because we have a discipline that has been given to us by our home group, discipline we've been given by a sponsor, not the same one, but the discipline. It's the formula, not the textbook. Whoever bound the book or whoever wrote the book doesn't make any difference. It's the formula that bakes the cake. That's the formula. You've got to remember. That's the you don't go down and buy a Betty Crocker box and then have your own instructions. You follow the instruction and it bakes the cake. And there's a set of instructions that works against the foe of alcoholism. And if you follow those instructions, then you can manipulate your way through the disease of alcoholism. I have no idea and wouldn't even venture to go there as to why the ladies here, and they're all ladies, no men out and on here tonight, why you love an alcoholic, or why an alcoholic is in your life, or why you're attracted to an alcoholic, or why you're obsessed with an alcoholic, I have no idea. I hope you find out for yourself. But you obviously are. You wouldn't be in this room. We didn't come here because you got hemorrhoids. You may call him a hemorrhoid, but somebody gave Sue a sticker, Fish gave Sue a sticker the other night and said, men are all what? Idiots. Men are all idiots and you married the king. I gave it to her. I thought it was a novel thing, but I better not see it on anything that I own. The important thing that I would like to share with you, and Sue asked me because there's newcomers here, and I can share a lot of different things. Certainly I drank. I come from a family of alcoholics. I'm at least a fifth generation alcoholic, and in my family, from my great-grandfather to my grandfather to my father to me, down the line, the chain, each one of those people were alcoholic. My father's the only one that went to Alcoholics Anonymous besides me, and I went first, and then he came. And he died with 27 years of continuous sobriety without a drink. And it appears to me through inventory and knowing, looking up my family tree, all the character defects of each one of these alcoholics in my family had certain, in the big book there's stories, and there's the devil may care chap, there's a idiot, there's a violent, there's a gambler, the womanizer, this, all those things. And all the character defects of the other alcoholics in my family kind of rolled into me. I mean, I grew up with them, so I was affected by them. And as a small child, I took my first drink that affected me, that I remember, at 7 years old. And I was in an environment, my grandmother had sent me with my grandfather and another man, and the idea was, I'm a little kid and I'm supposed to keep these people sober. Even though they had a corn whiskey jug and they gave it to me to hold it. And my granddad fell out of a car and it skinned him all up. He wasn't hurt that bad, but it skinned him all up and he looked bad. And everybody stopped and everybody took a drink and they gave me a drink. And I was scared to death standing there alongside that road as a little child. I was scared to death. I was afraid because I was going to get in trouble from my grandma because grandpa's drunk. I was afraid and embarrassed because people stopped and here this old man's drunk and he's falling all over everywhere. I'm a little kid. They take a drink. I take a drink. And standing there after taking a sip, but I'm 7 years old. And I take two or three sips out of this jug when they give the kid a drink. I took a drink. And pretty soon a warm feeling came over me and I didn't care if that old man lived or died. I didn't care what grandma thought about it. It was just like, alcohol did for me exactly what it's supposed to do. It just made it all go away. I didn't do anything. I didn't do backflips. I just kind of went along, carried the jug, got in the car, took the old man home. Everything's okay. If grandma was talking, it was just wah, wah, wah. And I just went off somewhere in there and eventually went to bed, went to sleep. The next day, it was another day. Now, I'm an alcoholic. And an alcoholic is a human being who has a phenomenon of craving for alcohol. And once you ingest some alcohol, something starts happening. Something in the formula, the chemical part of my body, starts happening that doesn't happen to most of you, probably all of you. It certainly doesn't happen to my wife, Sue. Is that when she may like the results, she might like the calming effect. It's a sedative, really, supposedly. How it's supposed to work is a calming effect. It's ether. It calms you. But in the alcoholic, what happens is that there's something that once that gets in there and you get that feeling, there's a formula that bakes a cake. And once I got that feeling, once that stuff went away, what happened to me was that I started wanting that. I wanted that drink. Now, at seven, I didn't go around and drink. Give me a drink. They were around, and I knew where they were. Now, all of a sudden, at 7 years old, at dances and stuff, I would pick up the empties, and I'd sip a little bit here and there. See? But what happened to me was I became a worrier. I became a worrier. I worried about everything. And in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, it says alcoholics drink because they're irritable, restless, and discontent. And a worrier is irritable, restless, and discontent. If you're a worrier, I'm not a control freak, I'm a worrier. I worry about, is the tornado coming? What's happening over here? What's happening over there? And at 13 years old, I had a duodenal ulcer, a bleeding ulcer. But by 13, I was locked up in a penitentiary for drinking. I was locked up from 12 and a half years old from 1952 and 19 till 1955. And in the penitentiary, I was a worrier. As a little kid, I'm in a penitentiary, barbed wire around it. Call it whatever you want. I couldn't get out. I was locked up from 1952 to 1953 because I was driving a car. I could drive a car at 12. I had a license where I live. I could drive a car. I had beer in the car. I ran over a kid, left the scene of the accident with bodily injury, and I ended up being locked up. And I worried. Now, in the confines of this controlled environment, I could participate in sports like boxing, football, all these active sports. So instead of worrying, I ventilated. I ventilated all that. And I became very violent. And I won Golden Gloves boxer, and I was extremely violent. Also during that period of time, I experienced a number of different types of sexual behavior with men, boys, other boys. I mean, it wasn't molested. Everybody did it. And if you didn't want to do it, we made you do it. And so there was all kinds of experiences. We lied, cheated, stole, we were punished. And I was taught those things. And in 1955, I got out and I went home. And I was a young man at that age. I had experienced a lot of things. I started drinking. I got married. I got in another automobile accident. There was bodily injury. And there was marijuana burlap bags in the trunk of that car. And I was incarcerated in Texas for a period of 18 months on a 3-to-5 beef because my father was a lawyer and a drunken lawyer, and he felt guilty, and he got me some leniency. And so I spent a couple of years in a penitentiary in the legal system in the men's penitentiary. So I learned some more things, all of which I learned down in the junior place. But all those things gave me an opportunity for my character defects to be experienced in a jail confinement, in a barbed wire. I couldn't go outside of that. I experienced all these things, all my character defects. And I got a point here. I'm telling you that because a lot of you are married to sober alcoholics. A lot of you are married to alcoholics that are drinking, and the confinement is here right now tonight. And you're in that confinement. And I can assure you that the alcoholics in your life are ventilating and they're experiencing in every direction. Right now, drunk or sober. And when I was incarcerated, those experiences could go, but they couldn't go outside the fence. But inside the fence, there's no limitation. And so I experienced all these things. I got out. I met Sue, and she was a pre-Al-Anon, and she didn't know it, and she was a strong, strong woman, a violent woman, could fight, could keep up, and she needed somebody to direct her life so she could have some fun, and I just happened to come along and said, let's have some fun, and we did, baby, let me tell you. We had some blast. I mean, she'd jump out of the car going 50 miles an hour. That was fun. And bash her head in and have to go back and get her and take her to the dentist and to the doctor and all that stuff. And we just had all kinds of fun, and we had all the wounds to prove it. I mean, we just didn't have fun and have a hickey on your neck, you know. We had fun. I had claw marks, a broken arm, broken leg, you know, punched out, black eyes. Sometimes both of my eyes were blacked. I just couldn't see. And Sue would just be, we're very violent people. We were very violent people. And, you know, some people are really ooey-gooey. Well, when we get together, it's just like explosion, boom. And it just blew up all over everybody that was around us. Extremely violent, extremely violent. I'm not talking about tetra tantrums. I mean, we hit people. People got hurt. People got hurt permanently. Some people died as a result of our experiences. And it was a messy deal, but it was extremely crazy, and I was drinking all the time. My drinking got out of hand, and there'd be periods of time when I'd be incarcerated, periods of time when I'd be married, periods of time when I would be guilty, periods of times when I'd go to church. There would be a sober period of time, and then I'd drink again and again because there never was a period of time when I didn't have some kind of alcohol or chemical in me which produced the effect that I needed to put something else in me. See, as long as I've got it in me, I need to put it in me. If I could learn to live without air, I wouldn't have to breathe. If I could learn to live without alcohol, I wouldn't have to drink. And when I'm drinking, when the alcoholic's drinking, not drinking is like not breathing. You tell an alcoholic, if you've ever drank beer with the alcoholic and you drink a bunch of beer, you need to pee. Really need to pee bad. Beer does that. I mean, you really need to pee. And if somebody told you when you had a belly full of beer, you can't pee for 30 days, you'd die. You couldn't do it. You'd explode. and tell an alcoholic to not drink beer for 30 days, they explode. See? Because it's relatively the same thing. Once it's in their system, you got to do it. And so, therefore, many, many times we would try to get help. We were ignorant. We had no idea. We didn't know about AA. My family, the people around me didn't know anything. And I progressed from a moderate drinker to a heavy drinker to a real alcoholic. And I'm a type 4 alcoholic. I progressed to a type 4 alcoholic. I was drinking more. I got my blood alcohol level up so that I didn't have... I went around all the time with a blood alcohol level so high that I could drink. It amazed her that I could drink a half pint and just be so drunk when she had been eyeballs on me for 2 days. And I hadn't drank or used anything for 2 days. And then I would go sneak a half pint and drink it, and I'd be so drunk on just a little amount because my blood alcohol was so high that it didn't take much for me to go over the line, see? And besides that, I started using different types of narcotics to try to get level flight, you know? And the problem with when an alcoholic uses different narcotics is that there's never a time when you're operating out there. If you smoke weed, take some Valium, drop some acid, drop some Reds, have a Quaalude, take some aspirin, take some Midol, you know, maybe some birth control pills that you found, you know, pour a little bit of something out of somebody's medicine cabinet here and there, and then drink beer, and you're drinking beer only. The problem is that whenever you take something and you're loaded like that, and alcoholics do this. They just take all these different things looking for something because as they're drinking, they're kind of, I'm going up now. No, 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 no. I got to go down. No, no, no. No, I got to go over here. No, no, no. And so what can I do to get the plane back on course here? And so I take these different things, and I'm operating in a playing field with all kinds of other alcoholics and dope fiends because we seek lower companionship. And what happens is my new friend has got something. Oh, it's called ice. Oh, maybe we should smoke a little crack. Back then it was freebasing, see? And that stuff gets in your system. So whenever you say, okay, I'm off of it, and there's a sober period, like 2, 3, 4 days, I still have little itsy bits of this and that and this and that and this and that. And then somebody comes along and says, how would you like a Manhattan with a little olive in it? Beautiful little drink at a cocktail party. See, honey, I'm just going to have one drink. One drink. I haven't drank in at least 2 or 3 days. And a little Manhattan or dry martini. That's not going to hurt anything. And I go, bam! And you know what happens? That stuff goes down in there and it goes boom, 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 boom. And it just, all this crap links up. And all of a sudden, here I am again. Ding! And the machine's in operation. And everything's connected. The only problem is it's been disconnected for a little while, so when it connects back up, it doesn't react the way it would if I had nothing in my system and had one Manhattan. The way I react is nothing like that. If I had all that in my system and I'd gone 2 or 3 days and somebody gives me a joint, hey, man, you're a little tense, smoke a joint. Now, marijuana ought to calm me down, but I got all this crap in there, and it's laying out in these little pockets, and nothing has linked it up lately. And I smoke a joint, what happens is, ooh, there's just kind of a little marijuana cloud goes out and connects everything, and I don't react the way I would if I just smoked marijuana. See? And that's what baffles her. She goes insane because when I smoke a joint, I rip the house apart. When I drink Everclear, I go to sleep. See? When I do speed, I might fall asleep. When I do Valium, I might rip the house apart. See? Because everything's connecting in there. I've got all this trash in me, all the beer and the margaritas, and nothing is working right. See? And most alcoholics, that are drinking regularly operate like that. And whenever you set them down and you're going to have this meaningful talk with them, well, you got to understand that there's about, it's kind of like watch Pirates of the Caribbean, and Davy Jones guy with that's an octopus face and has all the tentacles going out, or the snake lady that has all the things, snakes going in their head. That's me. And I'm sitting there looking at you like, okay, you caught me. I have to sit here and take this for a period of time, all of which I'm not sure how long it's going to take for me to implode and run out of here or walk out of here or come up. I'm thinking. I need an excuse. I'm thinking. Alcoholic's mind is brilliant. It's brilliant. It's better than any huge, humongous computer. The alcoholic mind is And the thing of it is, it's shooting the gap. It's got a thing that takes a picture of you who's talking to me and gives me feedback for your weaknesses. Yeah, I got her now. You ever watch, what is it, The Lie? People of the Lie, Lie to Me? The guy that can tell everything by your expression? Alcoholics are masters at that. They can tell where your weaknesses are, and they focus on it. It's just, yeah. You know, and it's just encompassing, and it's making a little diagram inside of me, so that pretty soon, after a period of time, I push the button, go boink, and then I'm gone. I disappear. And you seem to feel like you've won. There is a period of time when you think you've won, and you haven't, because I'm flying above you like some kind of a dragon out of waiting to come back down and play the game again. Because to me, it's not to drink, it's to play the game. I mean, that's the only game I got going. I've pissed everybody else off. I got to come home to you and play the game with you, because you're the only game in town. And I come home time and time and time again just to play the game. I got so good at it, we got to be so famous in the areas where we live, that many people came home with me to see me play the game with her, to watch her beat the hell out of me. And they wouldn't come anymore after she beat me up and them too. So it got to be people would give up gun smoke to watch my front yard, I guarantee you. It's bad. And we got a little daughter in there and all this kind of thing. And ultimately, what happened is I drank and drank that way. I went to Alcoholics Anonymous. I finally was court ordered, and I went to Alcoholics Anonymous. I tried everything, church, Zen Buddhism, Christian church, everything but the Catholic church. I got baptized. The thing is, the monster would come into the church and settle in a pew, and the preacher would give the hellfire and damnation, and the alcoholic monster was in me sitting there, yeah, and I'd go running down to the front of the church and throw myself at him and save me. And then I'd turn around and go out the back door and go out to my pickup and get a bottle of vodka, and they'd all be standing on the porch, and I'd go, oh, God, I had to go through all that shit. Get baptized in the holy water and listen to their sermons, and I'd come out here in my pickup on a hot August day and get that bottle of vodka out from underneath the front seat, and I'd take them just flying apart, because God has tried to calm the monster in the church ethics, and I get out there and I get that bottle of vodka. Oh, my God, it just burns down inside, and it goes down inside, and it comes back up, and there's something about it that just, I'm fine. What's the problem here? Huh? What's the problem here? Why are you crazy? Why are you standing in the middle of the restaurant screaming? Why are we being kicked out of the restaurant? Because you're screaming and throwing things? There's nothing wrong with me. I'm fine. Yes, officer. What's the problem here? Oh, her? She has the gun. I don't have the gun. What's the problem here? She's the one that was yelling and screaming. I'm fine. Can't you see? Look at my hand. And you could put me on a lie detector test and ask me questions, and the needle would be straight. You could plug that thing in at the hospital, and the needle would be straight like I was dead. There would be no emotions because alcohol had come back into my life and leveled me out. And for a brief period of time, everything is fine here. What's wrong with you? See? And that's what drives the loved ones insane, the small children. It drives them insane because they don't understand. One minute daddy's drunk, falling down, and the next minute daddy's fine. Something happens chemically, and I'm fine. I can walk that line. I can tell you my driver's license number, my social security, my date of birth, my mother's maiden name. And I'm released. And the next thing, I'm driving down the road, and I'm blind drunk, and I hit a pole. And I just walked the straight line 5 minutes ago. See? Because the body of an alcoholic changes consistently all the time. And whatever chemicals is in it, the mental fight to survive, the human fight of the alcoholic to survive while they're dying. We know we're dying. I'm not stupid. You can't put that much crap in me that's poison and not be dying. I know I'm dying. Don't tell me this is going to kill me. I know this is killing me. The problem is I'm not dying fast enough. Let's get it over. Get that gun and shoot me. I stood in my front yard and begged police officers to shoot me. This was years and years ago, 35, 40 years ago, when they didn't do that. A cop standing there shaking, and I'm begging him to shoot me. I was serious. Kill me. Put me out of my misery. Give me enough drugs to ingest that it'll kill you. Let me OD. Leave me alone and let me die. Don't clean me up. See? The problem is I hate me. And you keep telling me you love me. Don't tell me you love me. I hate me. The more you tell me you love me, the more I have to do to you to make you hate me like I hate me. It's an insidious warble inside of a cage that never stops moving. And the longer you run into it, the longer you stick your ideas and your fingers in that cage, the more it just hurts you. It's not that I want you to feel my pain. I've heard Al-Anon say, I want you to feel my pain. I really don't want you to feel my pain. Don't you know, my God, I love you. I love you. I love my wife. I love my daughter. I love my friends. I love my father. I know love. I'm not some kind of animal. I'm not a machine. I know love. But there's something that happens to me when I take drugs and alcohol. And loving you doesn't make any difference. See? Love doesn't do anything. It's just a speed bump. I promise. I'll go to church. I'll go back to school. I'll quit smoking. I'll quit driving. I'll go to jail. I'll get a divorce. Those are just speed bumps. I run right over them and accelerate. Till the hood flies up and I'm blind drunk. And many alcoholics die like that. See? Probably, truthfully, today, right now, 98% of all alcoholics die drunk, just like I explained. They go on with that until they die of alcoholic poisoning, overdoses, car wrecks. Many times it's labeled something else. And they die. About 1%, maybe 2% of alcoholics even get to Alcoholics Anonymous. Even get to Alcoholics Anonymous. And of the maybe 2% that get to Alcoholics Anonymous, about 1% stay. 0.5% go in and out. When I was going in and out, I was going home, and she was crazy, and I'd go to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. They say, don't fight with her. I'd go home. She'd want money. We'd have a fight over money. and then I'd be drunk. I'd go to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and they'd say, you know, don't mess around on your wife. And I'd go home, and I'd say, let's have sex. And she'd say, you're a pig. You smell like crap. I don't want to have anything to do with you. Then we'd have a fight, and then I'd go off down on Anaheim Street with the girls who understood me, and I'd be drunk again. Everything that I did when I went home and set up that, you know, I'd hit the ball and she'd hit it back. I'd hit the ball and she'd hit it back, and I'd be drunk. Because there was nothing. Nobody at home quit hitting the ball back. See? It was sick and crazy there. And when I'd flick it, I just flicked it because I didn't. I still had alcohol in me, and I still craved a drink. So every time I'd go to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, I might stay clean and sober for a short period of time, but not long enough to detox, and I had the alcohol in me or the drugs in me. I'd start a fight with something, and boom, I would react, she would react, and I'd be drunk. So as long as the game was played, I drank. See, I'm not blaming her. I'm just saying it's part of the formula. It's part of the formula that an alcoholic uses to keep drinking. See, once they get the momentum going, it's like a warble in a cage. And if you kick it back, it's just bam, I just come back. Here I come back. I promise you all these things. And then bam, here I come back. And I'm just using something inside of me that's a game with you. But I'm getting drunk. See, I don't have enough period of time with the alcohol or the narcotics out of me, that every time we play that game, I'm back out there drunk. I go for the drink. I'm the worrier. I'm the one that's rejected. I'm the one that's abandoned. I'm the one that, screw you, screw the world, stop the world, let me off, give me a drink. Because when I take a drink, something happens. And I got level flight. Problem with that is it'll work for an hour, work for a week, it'll work for 30 minutes, it'll work for 30 seconds, and then it don't work anymore. And then I drink, and it's still madness, and they're all out to get me, and nobody gives a shit, and nobody understands, and I can't even drink anymore. That's the frustration of an alcoholic or dope fiend, that you do not want to walk in that zone. Let me tell you, you'll get hurt. They're like a caged animal. You take an animal, a lion, and you put them in a cage and don't feed them. And then walk in there with a piece of meat. They'll attack you. And I'll tell you something interesting. I just listened to it again in a little documentary. It's talking about the difference between a drug addict and an alcoholic. There's a chemical difference. You can take 12 people in this room, that are not alcoholic, and give them heroin. Give them a little bit of heroin one day, a little bit of heroin two or three days. In a short amount of days, you would be addicted to heroin. You can take those 12 people and lock them in a room over here and take them completely off of heroin. After a period of time, let's say a week, you could go in there and open the door, and the 12 of you would walk out of that room alive, and you wouldn't be addicted to, most likely you wouldn't be addicted to heroin anymore. If you go over to the dog on a roof and you take 12 alcoholics who are sober, and you give them alcohol, a little drink here, a little drink there, a little drink here, control it, and then after they have got drunk, they've got an alcohol level, you put them in that room and shut that door for a week, half of them will be dead. Because the effect of alcohol on the alcoholic is poison. When you take the poison away, the effect on the body without it is a chemical reaction that will kill them. And the other six will run out and charge over you to get another drink. Now that's the difference between an addict and an alcoholic. See? And let me tell you, ladies, that are with a sober alcoholic walking around out here in this world, whether he's sober a day, a week, or years and years. I've been here 33 years. I've talked to thousands and thousands of alcoholics, seen thousands. I have unlimited experience, a bank, a huge, more than any computer, a bank of experience of alcoholics coming to Alcoholics Anonymous. I'll share with you. It's scary. It's scary for me that you would want to love one. Really. It has to be a disease that you would want to love, a fatal attraction. Because an alcoholic is a fatal disease. Alcoholism is a fatal disease. And my body, 33 years sober, is always, always looking to get loaded. That has never changed. God's in my life. I'm a very spiritual man, but I'm an alcoholic. And that thing is always there. It comes in the form of pain. It comes in the form of insanity. It comes in the form of sex. It comes in the form of gambling. It comes in the form of workaholic. It comes in the form of control. It comes in the form of anything that you can, infinite number of things. And it's always looking to be able to reach out and grab something, hold on to it, tell it's an obsession, and then it's a drink. And that's what you're in love with. That's what's in your life. I mean, we have seen so many people come through, families come through here, dad, mom, and children, and the sober alcoholic turns gay. All of a sudden, he's gay. We've seen people come through here, have years of sobriety, get a family together. All of a sudden, they're broke, corrupt. We've seen them come in here sober and not drink. You don't have to drink yet. We've seen alcoholics get sober, and all of a sudden they're gambling, destroying everything around them. Destroying everything around them. I had a grand sponsor that was 18 years sober, and he started gambling. And he had 4 rent houses paid for, a home paid for, a business paid for, and he lost it all. Lost it all. 18 years sober. Picked up a drink and never drank. He never sobered up again for 20 years. They cut off his legs, cut off his arms. He was a little vegetable thing sitting. His wife divorced him and married another guy and kept him in a shed out in the back. And he died 20 years after he, 18 years sober, picked up a drink because he gambled everything away. And then he drank. And then he never sobered up again for 20 years. And the last thing he asked for on his deathbed is, can I have a beer? The last thing he asked for. Incest. Sober. See, the alcoholic doesn't change. They have those things in there. All those things are going around in here. All these little character defects are running through our veins. The idea of an alcoholic is an obsession. Obsession is an idea that overpowers all other ideas. The only thing that happens in my home group is that we contain them. We rope them in. You ever see an old cowboy thing where they're herding a bunch of cattle along and they got a chuck wagon back there and they got a bunch of outriders and they're getting them little calves in, getting a herd. We're going to Kansas City, we're going to slaughter you and butcher you and make steaks out of you. And that's what the alcoholics think is going to happen. Oh, I'm getting a herd, now they're going to herd me down to Kansas City and slaughter me. I know. I'll never have fun again. I got to stay with her. I got to find a new her over in that herd. You know, I got to stay with these cowboys. I got to be branded with this brand. And they're going along. They're going along in Alcoholics Anonymous. But let me tell you for sure, there's openings there where ideas and errors coming in, thoughts and actions, and all the character defects. There's just little tentacles of temptation coming into an alcoholic all the time. And all he wants to do is something to make him drink. He wants to drink, irregardless of the amount of sobriety. We have some in my home group right now who refuse to grow up. 40 years old. That's just alcoholism. They just refuse to grow up. It's a mental case. It's something mental. An alcoholic can get so mental, the shock of taking the alcohol away will retard them. They can't write checks. They can't balance checkbooks. They can't function. They can't make a decision. They throw temper tantrums just like a little child. And they'll stay that way. They'll lock in. Medical people, psychiatrists, have the mental institutions are full of women who were in love with a man, and all of a sudden the man, there's no alcoholism or anything that's apparent, and the man rejects them. And because they had so much love and so focused on the man, their mind snaps and they stay in silence forever. Mental institutions have a lot of women that way. And they're in there because they can't accept that the man rejects them, and they lock. And they're just frozen because their love was so intense. They were so obsessed with this. They were so sure it was going to work. And then it was rejected, and bam, their mind snapped. Alcoholics, when taken off of alcohol and narcotics, can do the same thing. Don Pila was my sponsor. He went into a wet brain, and he was locked up for 3 years with shock treatments every day. They gave him shock treatment. And eventually, through shock treatments, the abstinence of alcohol and no drugs, he came back little by little. And when he got out of that institution, he went home and he took wood vegetable crates. Vegetables used to come in wood crates. And he would set in his back. They'd get one of those crates and he'd knock them apart, and they had little nails. And he would knock those crates apart. After 3 years in a mental institution and 3 years of shock treatment, off of alcohol, about four years, he would sit in his backyard, and then he put those crates back together. And little by little, he got to where he could function. Little by little, he got to where he could work, and he came back out of it. But so many of the alcoholics that I've seen lock into some immature thing. We have an accountant, Frank Nathan, and I got that accountant 30 years ago, and I've sent many alcoholics to Frank Nathan because of their income tax problem. And Frank, I gave Frank a big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. He's a very smart man. And he read the book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And then he looked at his case load that I had sent him. And his statement was this: most of these people, it wouldn't have made any difference if they had never drank alcohol at all. They're irresponsible, they're immature, and they don't want to grow up. They were that way before they ever took a drink of alcohol. And maybe when they were 14, 15 years old, 16 years old, they took a drink of alcohol. It allowed them to go around drunk for 10 or 15 years. But when they sobered up, they're still immature, extremely fearful, psychotic. Now you can be bipolar, paranoid, schizophrenic. And what do they do for you? They give you some nice little meds. And for the sober alcoholic, when a sober alcoholic is locked in that sobriety state and they hate it, and I'm being herded and I'm being told what to do, I don't know what I want to do. Dan Curry's over in Las Vegas right now. He just destroyed everything over here. He went over to Las Vegas. He's no different in Las Vegas, 25 years sober, and he's over there with Andy and Matt. And Andy told him today, "Dan, you cannot live this way with us. You have to do something. You're not working. You're not doing anything." 25 years sober. Look what he's destroyed with Chris and before and everything. He's 25 years sober, 40 years old, and he said today, "I don't want to be in Las Vegas, but I don't know where I want to go." And he gets on his computer, and he looks at his computer, frozen. And he can't make a decision. He's got stuff over here in a storage thing, and he doesn't even know what's in there. It's sad. It's extremely sad that an alcoholic with 25 years of uninterrupted sobriety with any kind of medication, I don't know what he needs. I'm his sponsor. I've been his sponsor for all that time. It's sad. Something bad is going to happen to him. And whoever's with him is going to get splattered. And the same applies to a lot of other alcoholics that are sober. And it's unbelievable that the amazing thing when I see the Al-Anon is that you love them. Can't you see that the fuse is burning? My God, I go to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous in Las Vegas. There's six people. There's 60 people there, 50 people there. There's six people there with over 40 years of sobriety. I don't want anything any one of them have. They've all been divorced. They've all been broke. They're all gambled everything off. They've all had all kinds of depressions and mental institutions. They don't have anything in the family, anything that I would want. It's depressing to look at them. 40 years sober and more. See? And people 30 years sober, they gamble all the time. They can't keep a relationship. They can't pay their rent. They're always borrowing money from somebody. It's unbelievable. When I look at that, I walk out of that meeting and I think, God damn, that's what I'm looking forward to? No. No. This is a disease. This is a disease where 98%, easily 98% of the alcoholics die drunk or loaded. I don't give a damn about any other disease. Alcoholism, 98% of the alcoholics die drunk or loaded in this world. That's big odds. Big odds. And to stay sober and keep your relationship and have a relationship with my daughter. Called my daughter's phone number today and my granddaughter answered the phone in English. She fought talking English, and she wants to talk to her grandma and grandpa, and she spoke English today to us. My daughter said, I got to go. I got to fix dinner. Click. I mean, she released our ass. You know, it's her birthday. She's 46, and I said, how does it feel to be 46? I got to go. Bye. You know, I would have expected that. When I was 46, somebody would have asked me how it feels to be 46. I would have thought immediately, 50's right around the corner, and then it's all over. My point is, I don't want to paint a gloom picture. I want you to understand what you're dealing with. What I want you to understand more than anything else is that you know who you are and what you are, or you wouldn't be here. There's going to be a lot of problems living with an alcoholic. There's going to be a lot of problems if you're affected by alcoholism. The important thing is, the thing that kills us is to rock along seeming like we know what's going on. And then something explodes over here, a landmine. You run over a landmine, and it seems like everything was going good, and all of a sudden, bam! Oh, I caught him with her. Bam! We're broke. All of a sudden, he's gay. Bam! He's gay. What did I do to that? Let me tell you something. The thing that causes the problem is you're surprised. If you're going to live with a fatal disease, don't be surprised at anything. It's the surprise that kills you. It's exciting to live with, you know, Commando and Terminator and Rubber Man and He-Man and No Man and Wow Man and Broke Man and Shit Man and Drunk Man and Loaded Man. It's great. It's exciting. It keeps you on your toes, baby, let me tell you. And you seem to want to do that. My heart goes out to you. But when this shithead alcoholic shoots himself in the foot, when he can't get out of bed, when he can't tell you he loves you, when he doesn't know where he is, when he doesn't know what he's going to do, he's 50 years old and he don't know what his career is, when he can't go to work, when he can't show up, when he can't tell the truth, don't be surprised. Don't be surprised. The program is, don't be surprised. When you turn on CNN, I mean, just try this. When you go turn on CNN, all you see is shit. People are blowing up. People are screwing somebody. People are boom, boom, boom. Just sit there and think, I live with one of those. That's my man. And then some goof will come on the TV and I'll say, don't worry, I'm your savior. We're all going to be all right. I'm printing more money. More money. No, we're not broke. It shows that little machine printing money. There you go, baby. Huh? Don't worry. I got it right here. Don't worry. Big Daddy's going to handle it. Here, you can have this. I got more. I come home lighting $100 bills one night after a crap game. I'd stole all the money out of the crap game, ran, got home, lighting money, lighting $100 bills. The next day, she was crazy trying to put them out and everything else. Next day, they beat the hell out of me for stealing all the money and took all my money. See, so feast or famine. Feast or famine. The alcoholic drunk, about all the difference between an alcoholic drunk and an alcoholic sober, is that alcoholic drunks run into a lot of, it's like bumper pool, you know. They run into a lot of things. Our perception's off a little. They say it's a disease of perception. Yeah, my perception's off. It's hard to see with one eye when it's clouded by a lot of mystic thought. And I sober up. I've got two eyes. I know what's wrong here. I know how to take care of these goddamn kids. I know how to handle the cookbook and the bake book and the goddamn checkbook. I know what's wrong with you. Let me tell you what's wrong with you. And then they go to bed and cover up into the covers. The perfect place for an alcoholic when it all comes down, go to bed. Go to bed, pull the covers over our head. Hide. Hide. Cuddle up and they go, oh, I'm so afraid. But I'm so afraid. All these macho alcoholics, I tell them, not me, man. I know where my strength is. When the world's coming around, the hounds of Baskerville are about to choke me to death, I cuddle up next to Mommy. And I say, sick 'em. You can get 'em. Sick 'em. Tell them sons of bitches. You know. And when I sit in the bar, I'd say, tell her I'm not here. And she'd be in there. You know, when I'm over there, tell them, tell her I'm not here. She's in there. Sober, I say, you need to get them, fix them. You need to take care of this shit. You need to talk to them. See? Because I'm a little chicken shit. I'm a scared little boy when I sober up. I'm a scared little boy. That's why most alcoholics who are new, if you're married or living with an alcoholic, they can't stay sober, is because they sober up and then they're a scared little boy. Then they drink and then all of a sudden. If you catch them when they're coming out of that, making the transition from a scared little boy back to a Terminator, you'll end up with a black eye in there. So you want to keep out of arm's length. And it's not a gloomy day. It's just another day. And there's so many people. Let me tell you a little secret. Sunday, last Sunday, any Sunday, the churches in Orange County are full of people who have nothing going on. And they're sitting in there, and the preacher says, you're guilty. Give me your money. Lay it on me. The devil's in you. Come on out. Step up here. Praise Jesus. Give me your money. I'm building a crystal cathedral. And these people, they throw the money at it. Look at these churches running. You know the good news for you? Nobody has to tell you what's wrong with you. You know you're sick. Nobody has to tell you you're guilty. You know the feeling. You're very familiar. And if you don't know it, go home and ask him, am I guilty? You don't need to go to church and throw for a simple dollar in a basket. You know what's wrong with you. You have an answer. And if you want to play a little bit, why, you can flick the alcoholic in his tender places and watch him skip around the room. Ping, ping. You have fun with him. You got to learn to laugh at him. It's like living with a big old pet. It's like living with a little old pet monkey that just runs around and climbs up on things and plays with himself and runs around. has all these dirty clothes and hungry all the time. What's to eat? What's to eat? What's to eat? When you're doing speed out there, asshole, you never wanted anything to eat. Now all of a sudden you quit doing all that and you want to eat all the time. Where's the ice cream? Yeah, go to the store. Here's a list. You got any money? The connection's at the front door. I owe him $100. Give me some money. See? You have to have a little, you learn to get little sayings, little verbiages that you throw out there that confuses him. Like, you might be right. Say it, but don't say it mean. Repeat that. What was that? Don't say I can't hear you, because he'll get right up on you and he'll talk to you loud. Yeah, yeah, don't say I didn't hear that. No, say that's fine.
Whatever.
That's a good one. Yeah, whatever. Yeah, I'm going to town. I love you. But don't say it twice. Just say it once. No. Try saying it whenever the light goes out. When the light goes out, say I love you. And don't wait for a response. No. Leave them notes. Stick them little notes. You know, with things on it, just like, okay. You can't believe how long an alcoholic will try to figure out what's okay. If you just say okay, he don't know what's okay. He'll go all over hell trying to figure out what's okay. If you leave one that says that's bad, leave a little note that says this is bad. Or it's bad. He won't move. He'll stand right there. He won't know what's bad. He's afraid to move for fear he's standing on a landmine. You got to have fun with it. It's not like cancer. It's not like any other disease. Alcoholism is so insidious that it will come in your life and control you. And the worst part about it is that once it gets in, it's like bad drugs. It takes years and years and years to purge your system spiritually for you to come back and be spiritually fit. That's why the summation is that you have the answer. You have the pace to set. The burden is yours. I'm sorry, but you wanted a cross to bear, and you worked for it, and now we give it to you. Alcoholics will gladly give you the cross to bear. I've been dragging it forever, and I'm tired. Here. The amazing thing is that if you get in there and you set the pace, and you be happy, and you smile, and you work a program the best of your ability, and you clear your luggage, you're not affected by the explosion and the landmines that are going off. It's just another alcoholic's day, drunk or sober. But you can survive. You can survive. It's a formula. It has God in it. It has the group in it. It has the sponsorship in it. It has the laughter in it. But in an insidious, hideous, terminal illness, if you will do what you're taught to do, if you will take the actions that you know to take, if you can keep it light and you can have a merry day, you who are carrying the load can survive. That's hope. Because the churches are full of people looking for a cross to bear and then bearing it for years and years and years to get to the point that you are right now. You have been there. You have been to hell. You have a green card out tonight. And you can survive. God bless you and I love you.